This is HBR episode 1741 entitled, HBR Community News for March 2015, and is part of the series, HBR Community News. It is hosted by HBR volunteers, and is about 77 minutes long. The summary is, HBR Community News for March 2015.
This episode of HBR is brought to you by AnHonestHost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon, and joining me tonight on the HBR Community News for March 2015 is...
Ahuka!
How are you doing?
I'm doing just great.
Excellent. Dave is unfortunately unable to be with us this evening, and 5150 says he was here last week, so... As is tradition, for those of you who don't know, HPR is a community network of peers who submit shows to a podcast on any topic that's of interest to hackers, and we've stretched that pretty thin over the years. HPR Community News is a once-a-month look at what's going on in the community, which really doesn't deviate more than a look at what shows has been on in the last month, which is open to everybody, obviously, what's been going on the mailing list, and comments on the episodes, all of which are available to each and every one of you. So anybody can do this show, and it's not just us. We record it. It's released on the first Monday of the month, which means it comes out on the first it's recorded the Saturday before the first Monday of the month, which means which is throwing everybody off, I think, this month. As is tradition, we'll welcome new hosts, and just so that they can have their names pronounced properly once before I butcher them, how about you introduce them, Ahuka?
Well, I'm going to say the first one is TCUC, and assume that's an acronym of some kind. The second one is Finn, and the third one is Be Easy.
I like Be Easy as a... I couldn't see the logic in that one until it went through the text-to-speech, and then I heard it. I would kindly ask all hosts, regardless of whether old or new, to introduce yourself at the beginning of episodes, because I've noticed now that people are... don't assume that everybody knows who you are. It's part of my regular spiel that I introduce myself anyway, so don't be afraid to introduce yourself.
Indeed.
Okay, 1716, which was released on the 2nd of April was community news for February.
So March,
thank you very much. No, it was community news for February. It was the 1st of March.
Yeah, so released March 2nd.
Yeah, exactly, about February. But our first show was TCUC, and it was Visualizing Electricity, which is a request that I have up there. And it was a nice explanation of current volts and resistance. And if there are people who want to do more of these type of shows, it would be greatly appreciated.
Indeed.
Especially with a lot of the hardware hacking stuff that's going on now. It's pretty cool. Speaking of hardware, we had 5150's My Pickup Toolkit. I guess a pickup is a sort of truck or something, a four-wheeled vehicle of some kind.
Very popular in the United States.
And my first topic was, this man needs to take out all his tools, clean them, and put them back together.
Well, you got to remember, 5150 is a farmer.
I do, and yes, I come from... That is no excuse. I've seen plenty of armor having a nice ordered toolbox. So yeah, that said, the majority don't. So fair enough. But it's quite interesting. I really enjoy that episode. It's another one of these interest hackers ones, I think. But some of the stuff he had in there, he was listing it off with the assumption that everybody knew what they, this is a, I don't know, widget of some sort, and another kind of widget. But I had no idea what those things were. I'm sure if Dave has made copious notes about all the things that he didn't know, being the other side of the Atlantic.
Yeah, I think some of this is another example of two people divided by a common language.
Yeah, exactly. But a great show, I loved it. And if you have a toolbox, toolkits, something, go through it as well. I'd be fierce interested to know. But when you're doing it, don't assume. I don't know, taking a Jubilee clip as an example. For some reason, we call a hose clamp a Jubilee clip in Ireland. I don't know why. I don't know what they're called here, but how was
Ah,
that?
so when you hear him say wrench, just translate it as spanner.
Yeah, a wrench, we know. Yeah, that's okay. It was just some of the brand names of sealants and stuff like that that got me
Right.
a little bit. The following day, we had JWP with a nice little show on the Linux tree command. And this one actually was one of the things when I moved from Windows to Linux. This was a very useful command that was in DOS for years, the tree command. It was very handy to print it off ASCII format and paste it into a document, and you get a ASCII visualization of a directory structure for people.
Indeed.
So, as show topics out there, anybody who's thinking, "Hey, I don't know what to do a show about," so then pick your favorite command that you use quite a lot, and open up the manual page and start reading and start recording.
Yeah, I hope someone will because it sort of looks like Dan Washko has given up on his Linux in the shell.
Now we'll start egging them on. I hope he'll reconsider.
Well, I mean, I've been egging him on every time I talk to him, and he's just always busy.
Yeah, I know it's tough, especially with having little ones and everything. So, yep,
Yeah, he's a family man.
that comes first. So, 15 certificate issues and solutions. I like this, Ahuka. This is your show, and the reason I
Thank you.
liked it was because it wasn't just issues. My pet peeve with a lot of the security podcasts is, oh, the sky is falling, and then this exploit is out, and you don't have an actual solution to it. And I'm quite chuffed with myself that most of the solutions that you mentioned, I've taken on, I had already taken on board. Well, one or two of them I actually implemented as well since you were talking.
Well, that's good. And one of the things I want to emphasize about this is that I'm not Bruce Schneier. I am not a world-recognized authority on this stuff, but what I'm trying to do is get at basics for the average user. And so it's really important that there be some solutions there that, just practical stuff. If you do this, you'll be safer than if you didn't do it.
Absolutely, and nothing. I don't. Well, I'm quite, as you know, a bit of a fan security buff myself, or like to at least be interested in it more as a hobby than anything else. But it would be good to get feedback from regular people in the field listening to this. Are you hitting the mark here with this? Is it too high? I personally thought it was a great steps that anyone interested enough in listening to HPR could maybe get a grip on anyway. And go from there, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm trying to do, and I welcome any kind of feedback. I may or may not agree with you, but as Ken knows, I do listen to every bit of feedback I get.
Yeah, absolutely. And anything that we've disagreed on that's been cordial, and I think both of us have learned either side of that, so that's cool. The following day we had, or the following episode, and still haven't managed to put in the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday thing. Was Cross Compilers Part 2, Cross Compiling by Mike Ray on the Raspberry Pi. And this is just useful stuff in general if you're cross compiling for any platform. He's, you know, taking the Raspberry Pi. You don't necessarily need to be using the Raspberry Pi here, but it's super, super useful. And also excellent show notes as well with HTML and all the rest of it. Very, very detailed in the show notes. Very enjoyable to listen to. And I thought there's always the balance. I think you probably know what it will mean, you know, the balance between doing something in audio. Do you spell out every command, or do you, you know, how you describe it and leave the copying and pasting of the commands to the listener?
Yeah, that's a tough one, but Mike does a great job. I'm really glad to see him coming on board and doing these shows.
Absolutely. And, you know, I cower to his knowledge and expertise. The leash is strong in this one. Then we had Kansas Linux Fest Northwest, a promo. Northwest. Why am I talking with an Irish accent? Jesus. Kansas Linux Fest Northwest. No, it's not
I don't think there's a Northwest in that.
Well,
one.
Southwest, East West, all the West, all the West. Everything over there in Kansas is West to me. I've seen plenty of Westminster.
Well, it would be Midwest, if anything.
Smack bang in the middle. It's west of me. Yeah. How about that?
Kansas Linux Fest.
Yep, Kansas Linux Fest.
And we are joined
by the man himself, 5150.
Yeah, sorry, I just looked at the clock, realized what time is.
You seem to be cutting in and out, as is traditional with your podcast, 50.
So this was a promotional, and that's great. In fact, I'm going to try and record one this weekend for PenguinCon. But 5150, why don't you give us a review now that you've had Kansas Linux Fest? Tell us about some of the high points. And
no, that would be wasting a show. How about you give us a short summary of what it was as a teaser to the episode, which you no doubt will do.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, plus you're probably going to hear me on my regular podcasts give reviews ad nauseum. I think it came off very, very well. You guys hearing me okay now?
Yeah, perfect. Hey, yep. Perfect. Yeah,
great.
Okay, I just must have left my finger slip off the button before. Yeah, we had approximately 100 or maybe a little more attendees each day. I got the impression, just looking at the crowd, it might not have been the same people every day. I mean, as you might think from the first episode of a fest, that you're getting more local people, and there's going to be some folks that could afford to come drive up one day and then go home, but not take the time to get a hotel and stay for 2 days.
I think
we had some really great speakers, and how, you know, fellow HPR contributor Mike DuPont arranged that when he came up with the idea for the fest. What he told me is he just went through every fest across the United States over the past 3 years, looked at the speakers and saw which ones lived in the Midwest. So we had some really great technical talks and some high end stuff. We had Twitter there. Oracle, we had Rackspace, you know, you know, people from big companies and people representing big ideas. Unfortunately, the organization for recording stuff happened a little, and I should have mentioned it earlier. I just assumed, and you know what that did, and that I mentioned to Mike maybe a week and a half, and he hadn't even thought about recording stuff. And unfortunately, they bought some cameras, but apparently, according to Mike, none of the video came out. So, unfortunately, the only talk you're going to hear from Kansas Linux Fest is mine, which I re-recorded once I got home and is coming out Tuesday.
Oh, that's unfortunate. But, I mean, this is the first time you've run this fest, so, I mean, you're going to have teething problems. If it was perfect the first time, you know, there's nothing to strive to the next time. And I presume there will be a next time, will there?
Oh, yeah. We've had a lot of interest from the three major universities in Kansas. Of course, this time it was held at the Lawrence Public Library, Lawrence, Kansas, for those that don't know, being the home of Kansas University. Probably next year, what sounds like it's going to be held on the Kansas University campus, so it won't move towns, but it will move locations. The year after that, perhaps Wichita State, and then the year after that, my alma mater, the Kansas State University in Manhattan.
Well, that's a good idea, moving it around. So what was the venue like, or will we hear this on your show?
Well, just briefly, everyone was questioning whether a public library would be adequate, and I think it was perfectly adequate. The main speaking hall was, oh, not the size of a huge university lecture room, more like the size of perhaps a high school auditorium for a moderately large high school, but it was plenty big enough for any of the talks we had in there. The other two rooms were like more like small we had in college, maybe 35 feet, something a lot of people were thinking. Those may have been a little intimate for the number of people that attended some of the talks. But the nice thing about each of those rooms, they each had a 90-inch HDTV to plug your equipment into for display.
Very good. Okay, shall we move on to the episode 1723, Success with Students, speaking of universities and students. And this was Kebby, who had to do, who's a teacher and had to do a filler class, I think, or a voluntary class, and got his kids interested in podcasting, Creative Commons music, and all the rest of it.
Wonderful show. I really liked it.
It was just one of these feel good, yes, win for us type episodes, I thought.
Yeah, and I really liked the way he addressed the whole copyright and Creative Commons and all of that. And that, you know, he worked with the students to just say, here's some things you really want to be aware of.
Exactly. It's come up as well, you know. So, yeah, very, 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 very good.
Well, I mean, if you change one person's mind, it's worth the effort. And he had at least four going for a while and three sticking with it. We can't expect, whole classes of students to turn their backs on proprietary software immediately, but you got to make these incremental steps.
I mean, you also introduced the concepts, and I know myself that my journey involved a switch to Linux and then a switch back and then a switch and then a switch back and a switch, and then eventually you just wake up one day finding out that you haven't used another operating system for a year or two, so you just wipe that redundant partition and be done with your life.
Free at last!
Yeah, but even the philosophical concepts to kids, like we had civics, or I don't know what it's called in other classes, where you ponder about the ethics of society. The whole discussion about copyright and Creative Commons, that is a great introduction in itself, and this is a great example of introducing that to people. And if people choose not to use it, that's all very well, but at least they're aware of it. Okay, the following day we had Vim Hints, Tips for Vim Users Part 2.
Yeah, great series. I'm really glad Dave is doing this.
And it's thorough. Oh my God, it's thorough. And was it this one where he explained what's happening with that swap file? When yes, it is the don't panic one. I've had that so many times where I've edited a file, a session's broke or the VPN has gone down or I've gone under a tunnel or something, and then come back in and then deleted the swap file, and then only to be told something has gone wrong, and that explains what was going on. Finally, thank you, Dave. Thank you. Also, with most excellent show notes for everybody who is following along, you can copy and paste.
Yeah, Dave's good at that.
And yes.
And along with.
Sorry, go ahead.
Vim is CI back in college when I had a Unix system.
You're it's cutting in and out 5150.
That ain't better?
I think so. Give it a try.
So I learned Vim back in college.
Now you get out two words and then you're off again.
Okay, I'll get out and come back in and see if it makes a difference. That ain't different?
Sounds like it.
Okay, sometimes Plumble does that to me. I was going to say, between Frank Bell's episode, which I think we ought to roll those all into one series, I think. But I used to know VI back in college, work back working on a Unix terminal, and of course that skill has atrophied. And between the two of them, these episodes have encouraged me to, at least think about getting back into VI. So, because there's just some things Nano doesn't do very well.
And as you were doing that, I added that to the base series, the Vim series.
Excellent.
Speaking of long-running series, templates, recording billable time using styles to illustrate the usage. Another example of good show notes, good shows. This one is good because I have this thing where I'm printing spreadsheet styles, and it was annoying me having to change it every time, and I never actually thought of applying a style to it and saving it as a template. It's one of those dumb moments on my part.
Yeah, this is what I did something similar with Writer, and I will undoubtedly do something again with Impress to say, after we've discussed all these things theoretically, let's do a project, and then you can see everything coming together.
Yeah, it's excellent. And give us a shout reminder before we should really get on to the LibreOffice people and do something. Getting all these episodes onto a DVD or something that we could give out on a cross promotional thing.
Sure. It's all Creative Commons.
There you go. 15 excuses not to record a show for HVR, inspired by a recent meeting with Ken Fallon. Nightwise presents 15 excuses not to record a show. I don't have the right gear, my sound is not polished, I don't know how to upload, I don't have a radio voice, I don't have time, I'm too shy, I don't have anything to say, the stuff I like is really niche. What if I get negative comments? Who would listen to my show anyway? I've never done this before. I'll get around to it someday, recorded the show, but I'm too afraid to submit it. Takes too long to edit out the ums and ahs, and I don't know anything about editing audio. I don't think you missed any there, do you?
But I was listening to it thinking, I do all kinds of stuff. I've got a lot of ums and ahs, and it's not really studio recording or anything, but seems to work okay.
Exactly, folks. Let's take a step back. This is HPR. We're just lads, lassies down in the pub, sharing a few stories about the stuff we're into. Everybody else that you talk to over there won't understand you like we will. So just press record and send it in. That's all you have to do.
Yep.
The following day, Frank Bell, the Phoenix from the Flame, returns with Mutt. And I am dying. This is one of the ones that I actually wanted somebody to do for such a long time, and this clarified a lot of things for me.
And it's also really great to have Frank recording again.
Absolutely, it's great to have him back. And I need to set this up
Oh no,
as
Frank, I want Frank to know.
What does 5151 Frank to know? Tune in next week, folks. Same time, same channel.
No, I just wanted him to know we were discussing this episode last night on Linux Ludcast because we were talking about setting up Mutt, and I asked if anybody had looked at that episode, and yeah, they were using it as a basic template.
Excellent. I'm planning on getting myself a Raspberry Pi 2 to upgrade the Raspberry Pi that I have here, and then I intend to use centralized Mutt. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. See how it goes. Then we had Finn. I believe Finn is a new contributor as well,
Yes, indeed.
with favorite browser extensions and some nice ones here. I added Adblock Edge was one I added that I wasn't aware of. And there was one other one that I had found out about as well, but also good show. Like the security. I was tempted to put this into the security
I
series.
think it's a fit.
I think so too.
A lot of the extensions that he talked about were security and privacy related.
Shall we do it? Shall we do it?
Sure.
And one I'd like to that I is a session because I keep open and if you can save the session, you leave Firefox, and even if the whole thing crashes, you can always return tabs.
Yeah, you're going to have to do an episode on that because you're Xyloning big time. Oh, yes, David Whitman with a real hack, hardware hack in real life, with a wood stove and the solution he came up with. Actually, really like the look of his wood stove and his solution, to be honest. There's a PDF in the show notes with the photos of what he came up with. And of course, I'm very envious of all of you guys who have your own shop. The following day, we had 1730, 51 Shades of Beer. Part 5, the River City Brewing Company Revisited. And if I ever make it over to Kansas, I will be bringing 50 over there for some hamburgers and beer.
Yeah, he really makes you want to go out there and visit.
Yeah, so I went to Lawrence. I'm now up to three brew pubs, looking at visiting a fourth one in the state in a couple weeks.
I have a beer in the fridge which I've been planning on attacking shortly. It's just a random one I got at actually the beer quality is quite good. Down one of the local shops, so I might do a review of that perhaps. Anyway, Swift110 told us about upgrading his old Fujitsu Lifebook 4215 with new memory, new hard disk and stuff. So yeah, this is actually pretty cool. Don't know if many people think of the concept of upgrading laptops. Desktops, you assume that you're going to do that, but with laptops, I think there's more feeling, or especially with the likes of Apple soldering on the memory, that the possibilities for upgrading are not as many with a laptop.
Apple is not very friendly to upgraders, but many laptops you can upgrade the memory. You need to take a look at the motherboard specs to see what's possible. And of course, putting in a larger hard drive is almost always an option.
And I can tell you,
Go ahead, 50.
you can really wake up an old machine by putting in an SSD. Now, I've had some stability problems where I wished I'd had off external backup, but as far as speed, boom, you'd swear you're running a much newer machine.
Yeah, I can see how that would work.
So we were quite low on shows there for a while, folks. Quite low on shows. Not very impressed, but yes, the old regulars stepped up to the plate. And we had renovating another public domain counterpoint textbook by John Culp, and he, yeah, it's. I actually had a look at this book, and very, very professional. Had me thinking about, if I was doing books for people. I've been asked to, about ebooks for people, how to go about it. This will be my first port call, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And he did a really good job of covering the technical details of how to make everything work together. But the other thing is that I'm really impressed that he's thinking about the implications of, textbooks for students cost a fortune.
Yeah,
And,
exactly.
it's education in this country, at least, is just becoming unaffordable for a lot of people. I know where you are, Ken, it's a little bit different, but out here, I think the tuition each year for the University of Michigan is around 40,000. And then, your books are probably 150 per textbook and so on. You graduate with so much debt, it's hard to see how you ever get out from under.
Yep, my personal view is all education should be free for everybody. But, comrades, come join me.
Well, and with the digital version, at least we can start to get away from the concept of dead tree textbooks. However, it may be a little harder to go through and use a highlighter. I mean, certainly you could do it in markup, but I remember having a professor who was writing a textbook, and we had to go down the Kinko's and print the next chapter. And by the time you were done paying Kinko's every week, you could have bought two or three textbooks. So, I mean, by the end of the semester. So if there's
Yeah,
any way to.
but I mean, now if you look at my episode on CISS printing, continuous ink supply systems printing, which I bring up because after 2.5 years of printing a lot, I finally had to refill the charger, the ink, and that was $20 that cost me. So I've been printing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages. So yeah, I think even the concept of having to get the price of printing has come down so much now that even if you don't have a good ebook reader, which a lot of them, you know, you can pick up a relatively cheap ebook reader. If you do need to print off stuff or you want a physical copy, it's relatively easy to print it off yourself and affordable.
I've kind of converted most of my life over to electronic books anyway, so.
Well, the thing I have, and my wife mentioned as well, that going through a textbook. You sometimes do need to refer back to, you know, a formula on a particular page or something like that. That's, you know, the blue, blah, 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 that you have different color, you know, post-it notes on the side that related to different particular strands of thought going through the book. Ebooks are
Right.
fine. I find ebooks fine for, you know, just reading a book, a novel. But for a textbook, it does help to be able to go back and refer to that page where the diagram is and then follow on and then go back and just flick between the two. It seems like a good idea. Not insurmountable, but there you go. The following day, we had Kevin Wisher sent in the Linux Slugcast episode 3 outtakes. And these outtakes are as good, I always say they're as good as shows as the shows themselves, but it's there's very, very good content in there, so I'm happy to have them on HBR. But why are they an hour and a half, an hour and 10 minutes of a show of banter and then an hour of a show? It's strange to me that you wouldn't press record and just release the whole thing. But we were happy to have them, as it was very looking very poor there in the queue for a while. We were down to actually having no shows. Then the following day, we had Vim Hints Part 3, which of course gave Dave the excuse to create a series. And a series has in fact been created, moving around, and he's done the full show notes as a separate page. And the show notes in this case, he's using a markup language which he can produce an EPUB book, speaking of EPUB books and stuff. So everything. He's even included the HBR style sheet in his show. Pretty amazing stuff. Then the next episode was free tutorials for teachers based on the LibreOffice thing, which I was very happy to see. The only thing that I was a bit saddened was to see the free of charge, that there is a non-standard copyright license, even if it was a CC by SA NC and non-commercial, I would have been happier with that. But have I lost everybody?
No, we were just making sure you were done with your thought, but I mean, this is a great thing that's been released by Professor Poole, because I a lot of the obstacles to getting open source software implemented in the classroom would be documentation, because the average teacher is going to be used to open office. I'm glad to hear there are some that are open to other possibilities. Every time I try to integrate open source software at school I worked for, people would look at it and say, "What is this? Why isn't this the same as everything we've always done before?"
Yeah, exactly. Hookahs just dropped off and dropped back again. So the following day we had Be Easy with how I use Linux for my business. And quite a lot of these I had not heard of before, and would be a good idea for to get a individual episodes on some of them. But he has pretty much gone all out as much as he can in any event.
Yep, good stuff.
Then Frank Spell's episode on 5 Steps to Vim, which if you think Dave's series is thorough, then this should probably be episode 0 of the series, just getting you started, all you need to know to get started and edit some stuff on Vim.
And it's a good part of the series.
The following day, we had credit card PIN breach, where we exposed a well-known but ignored security breach. This is sent in by Anonymous, and it was released on the 1st of April. And we basically gave a very thorough rundown of all the PIN codes that were released.
Yes, and it was not an April Fool, huh?
Well, it's moved into a separate. It's the series number has been changed, put it like that. Theatre episode 1739 was Theatres of the Imagination Part 7, which is Lost in Bronx went through some of his the hardware that he's using, and there had some recommendations for audio clips, the wireless theatre, and the lives of Harry Lime. And just talked about his Tascam DR40 and the Zoom H4n. Good reviews for those of you who are using independent audio devices. So it was a good one.
Excellent show, but we've moved into April. Was that the plan?
No, that was not the plan. That was not the plan. So we will discuss that next month. As I don't edit shows, I'm asking everybody to rewind their brains and remove that out of them. That would be fantastic. So, 50, we have here is the link to the episode, which I'll paste into Mumble, where you can see the mailing list discussions that's been going on.
Oh, okay. Just a minute. Or no, please go ahead and I'll take care of it.
Okay. So the first was from Sigflup looking for a high quality image of the logo, which I pass on through. I think on my to-do list, I need to make that a little bit more, all the images a little bit more available. If somebody has any suggestions, I'd love to hear it, that I can just drop them into a directory without, and they appear without too much problem. So 50 was asking if anyone's attending Liber Planet, and if not, Kansas Linux Fest is the next event. We had Mike Ray, Fear and Lothinian.
It's a pun, or play on words. The American writer Hunter S. Thompson wrote a book, Fear and Loathing. And so he's making a play on that, Lothian being Scotland.
Missed that one. People are too educated around here.
Well, have you ever read the Doonesbury comic strip?
Kind of.
The character Duke is based on Hunter S. Thompson.
Okay, fair enough. Then we had Frank Bell was had just uploaded a show and was looking for the show synopsis. So that's been renamed to show summary because so synopsis was confusing people. Pokey Patrick Daly sent out an update that on April 14th at 8 p.m. sometime, Pokey. You know, we use UTC. I presume it's not going to be 8 p.m. UTC. There's the recording of the audiobook club. And I couldn't find the RSS feed on the website. So I contacted them and got the RSS feed. And then I hacked together a little script using my favorite tool in the world, which is XML Scarlet, to make an XSLT and to save it. And I asked for comments, and Dave replied with a better version, although he should have replied with a new show. And then in the middle of that, Klaatu replied, obviously not having heard the mail list etiquette one. He changed the, did a reply and changed the title to Travel Life, True Life Travel Stories. So he is, so this is another topic, True Life Travel Stories. So if you've been, if you've had first-hand experience, so I want to compile a HPR episode of interesting stories about traveling with computers, preferably focused on TSA interaction, in an attempt to better understand what these fine defenders of the American way of life are looking for when they are inspecting computers. So if you are interested in doing that, can you reply to that one? We had 50 looking for the banner for HPR for the event. I made a minor change to the reserve. I changed the reserve now to upload now, because I was confusing people.
Yep.
It's amazing how much stuff, I think. Yeah, God, what was I thinking? Anyway, that's this. We had the good old call for shows. And basically, if you don't have 2015 next to your name on the host page, then start recording a show. This is not a free podcast. Nobody said this is a free podcast. It's gratis, as maybe, but you are required to send in one show a year. That's all we ask. Thank you very much.
I better go check right now and see if I'm up to date.
I think you're pretty good to 2016 by with the rate you send in shows.
Yeah.
I got some another promotional material, but this one was about a podcast interview for somebody who's done the mind changing, you know, hacking his or his mind. It seemed to be fairly targeted. It seems like they at least knew that we were a podcast and not whatever. So if somebody's interested in following up that, really, it's a free book, free ebook at least. Then you can, you know, your call. It's not something I particularly want to do myself. 5150 talking about bad email etiquette. And I don't know how he, 50, how did you even become aware of this show? Because it wasn't released at the time. Maybe it was uploaded.
Well, it was either between some of our private conversations or it was out on the list that Dave Moore said something about there were, somehow, there was an email client that was deleting the thread parts during replies. And I replied, no, that's me manually deleting the thread parts because I don't like to scroll through them if I already know what's going on. And I didn't realize that that was bad etiquette to do that. So I won't be doing it anymore. So seems like half your problems, Ken, are when I do something that's bad etiquette and you have to remind me to do it differently.
Yeah, you're not the only one to remind to do stuff, 50.
I think that was actually, as I read it, was a misunderstanding. If you're editing the body of the email to remove stuff, that does not cause problems. What Dave is talking about is changing what's in the headers.
Yeah, if you will discuss that next month on the show.
Because it was Friday's show.
It was Friday's show, yes, exactly. Although I must say James Tobias reply about bad email etiquette was excellent. Giving some very good email rules. Always use uppercase text. Always run long sentences together. I had a check.
Heavy on the sarcasm.
Oh, I know people who live by those rules. Believe me, I do. And then the last one was HBR notice for this show, actually. We were joined by David Whitman in the meantime. How are you, David?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's afternoon here, so we're just about noon, so I'm able to jump on.
Well, very welcome to have you here. It is almost 9 o'clock. In the evening here. Oh, we had a lot of comments this month. A lot of comments on episodes, which is great, actually. So let's start by a comment on episode 1170, 8, which I'm sure there are some of you out there who will know what episode that was, but it actually was an interview with Laura Clarington and Amir Rigo, and it was FOSCON 2011, of all things, and the link to FOSCON appears to be broken, and it's 2011, so yes, that happens with a lot of, it was an interview by CT. Happens with a lot of our episodes that are up so long. It's a virtue of the fact we're such a long-running podcast, in actual fact, that it results in, yeah, sometimes we, the sites, we outlive the people we're talking about, so.
Yeah, my personal feeling is I wish people would leave stuff up and not break the links, but I could make it a full-time job just going through updating my links all the time and never get around to creating any new content, and I've decided that's just not worth it.
Yeah, that's my pet peeve, actually, about the internet. You know, there is the concept, I've heard this fallacy that, you know, it's always going to be available on the internet, and that's not actually true. All that's available on the internet is links to the information, so all we'll have is your short snippets of great works while the works themselves are gone. I've had it where I've been trying to track down old episodes of podcasts and things, and hundreds upon hundreds of links to it, but nobody actually having all pointing back to the same location, which is unavailable.
But if you go to the site that has all of my LibreOffice stuff and you poke around, you will discover that there is a series of tutorials on DOS. And I did that years ago, and at a certain point I thought, oh, no one really cares about this anymore, and took it down. And within about a week, I got an email from a computer science prof saying, put that back, I'm using it.
Absolutely excellent. Well, it's such a problem on HBR. Dave and I have been thinking about doing a link checker thing where we check all the links that we have, and if we don't find them, then automatically change the link to, link is down, and then put a link to the archive.org link.
I've always thought it hilarious. At least more than once, Klaatu has mentioned that he's trying to figure out a problem, and he finds just the perfect article on it that solves his problem, and then he realizes that he wrote the article.
Yeah, I find that funny. True. Quite often I'm looking for a solution to the problem and come across his article, so that's also quite good. Actually, that's pretty cool and a happy thing that has happened more than once, where I'm just Googling for stuff randomly, or DuckDuckGoing. DuckDuckGoing will never turn into a noun. And turn up with at someone's site that I, in inverted commas, know on in the internet. It's always chuffy. Okay, two comments to my episode of YouTube downloader script. Person tried to run the script, so I give them some tips on how to run it. Then we had an comment on episode Wiki on my Raspberry Pi by Mr. X, which was 2014-04-28. And it was, the comment was, see our wiki.
I believe that's CI Wiki.
CI Wiki, that's correct. Thank you. Which is a DocuWiki clone, and that's pretty cool. An episode on that would be quite cool. Tim Timoney, who is a HBR host.
Mm-hmm.
Arduino 101, Breadboard, great show. Comments by Miri. A 3-volt, 3... made a slight distinction there between what a speaker and a buzzer was, and that actually helped me immensely. Michael sent in a comment on that as well, about what the difference between a buzzer and a speaker is, and that writing 3V3 is a fairly standard way of describing 3.3 volts. So, pretty cool. Michael, if you could contribute a few shows, that would be great, especially on electronics, if you're commenting. It means you're listening. If you're listening, it means you also show. FOSTEM 15, part 5 of 5, and somebody just saying that they enjoyed listening to the show. Alison, Thank you very much.
As did I. They were great shows.
I really, I want to, I really have, it's a pity that the MP3s haven't got, or the audio files haven't got chapter marks in them, because I really would like to forward those to people. There's been about three or four different people where I forward some of those interviews to in work. So, what's in my crate? Bezra responded with a follow-up episode, and Mike has replied to that. And he wanted more. He wanted to know from a developer's perspective how Mike tests applications and uses debuggers and a box of SD cards, how he knew. So, very cool. More episodes. Not that I'm one half of me is going, great, more episodes. But the other half is, yeah, create more Mike Ray episodes. So that's pretty cool. Comment on Dave Morris's Vim Hints 001 episode. Nice introduction to Vim. This is by 0xf10e. Saying that OS X comes out with the Vim. And for anyone using Vim on their server, the FreeBSD package is Vim Lite and Vim Nox on Ubuntu. Okay, good to know. And Dave comments then about full-blown Vim on his Raspberry Pi and stuff. Commenting on HPR community news for February 2015, we had Mike Ray, Dave Morris, Mike Ray and Dave Morris comment. Parcel of Rogues. And yes, actually, he mentions that I should, because I was saying this, oh, this tech of his is pretty cool. And yeah, it is pretty cool from the point of view. I have the luxury of only wanting to use it. He has the necessity of having to use it. And I have been thinking about doing one of those courses and trying to live a day with a blind goggles on, you know, completely see-through goggles and sensory deprivation stuff, and see how far I got on. that would be worth doing. My wife has done it several times, and she also has done it with other people because of her profession. But it's pretty scary when you put on those when you have to tackle the world without the aid of vision. And he and Mike are talking about, Dave and Mike are talking about something Scottish there, which I absolutely have no clue what they're talking about. Rob, when you start talking about Robert Burns, then you've lost me.
Yeah, Mike had apparently used the phrase parcel of rogues. And so, I don't know if someone took that amiss or thought that he was saying something negative. And it was like, no, it's the Robert Burns quote. I thought you'd have gotten the reference. Dave Morris, I gather, is Scottish.
Nah, he's a Sosnach. He's only pretending to be Scottish.
Okay.
Nah, he's he lives in Scotland. So there you go.
Okay. And you know, how many people will know what Sosnach means?
He's a nice fellow, obviously.
Yes.
I'll comment on 1521, which is yours, 15 certificate issues. And the comment was from that I really enjoyed this show. Keep them coming, which I hope you do.
Yeah, I've got more that I'm working on. I must admit, I have kind of slowed down over the last couple of months, what with going for a new job and everything. But
you know, you've put in your fair share, so other people want to step up to the plate, there's plenty of free slots.
Yeah, well, I certainly have not stopped.
So we had a comment there on Cross Compilers Part 2 by Mike Ray, and Felix said good job and fantastic series, and he's making a difficult topic understandable, which I think is kind of the point. Somebody put in the wrong URL, 50.
Yeah, I've been saying linksfest.org for months, even though I've had the page open in my browser. It's probably why, if I had to retype the, had to find the page again, I would have realized I've been saying it wrong. So Dave Morse was at least nice enough to fix my show notes for me, but I couldn't get it re-recorded fast enough to get it back in and fix it before it went out. Also, Ken, you skipped over the comment by Mike Ray was left for me on 1718. I'm surprised how much response that has got, though I shudder to think what you and the Hookah said about it before I got on. But Peter 64 also made a comment on that episode telling me I should get my toolbox cleaned out.
Yeah, we haven't come to that yet.
We did talk about that. You'll hear it when the episode comes out.
Oh, okay, we did, yeah.
Yeah, you skipped over it.
That was a great episode, What's in My Toolbox, and I have some old Permatex around here if you need it.
What's his...
I've got all kinds of old Permatex. It's a gasket sealer. It's this black stuff. It's kind of like silicone. And when you put a gasket on something like a water pump, you spread that sealer on at least one side of the gasket, and it forms a better seal.
Okay, yeah, the comment was from Mike. A great episode. It was right there. All I could do at the end was not to go and wash the oil and grime from his hands. Yes, I had that feeling myself.
And I'm thinking I could turn that into a series. I could do it. What's behind the seat in my pickup? What's in my glove box? What's in the passenger seat? What's in the bed of my pickup?
Yeah. Yeah, just on the comment about the episode 1722, Kansas Linux Fest. You had recorded a show and uploaded it, but once it hits the midnight or UTC and the show is released, then it becomes a pain to redistribute it. So if I know about it, I can change. Okay, just tell you how the workflow goes. If you upload a show, what I'd prefer is, not talking to you 5150, if one, the community, uploads a show, then you can upload a slot. And once you upload, you're kind of expected to have the show finished. So the last thing that you do is you go and you upload a show. So you've recorded the show, you've done whatever editing that you wanted to do in it, and then you're ready. That's when you hit the website and you upload it. You have the option there to pick a slot and then upload it via FTP or send it via snail mail or whatever. If you're uploading it via FTP, I kind of expect in my head that I will see that coming within an hour of the email coming up to me that you have finished uploading the show. And if I don't see it within a day, then I start to worry, well, because what's going on? Now, if you want to reserve a slot, you can also do that, but slots need to be reserved via the mailing list. So nothing has changed with that whole process. We do have an agreed procedure for reserving a slot. So if you want to reserve a slot on somebody's birthday to commemorate some event that's happened, then just fire off an email to the mailing list and say, I would like to reserve this slot for this reason. Then I have yet to see anybody argue with that. Then you can go and you can pick the dates in the calendar and just simply reserve the slot. So if you are just uploading a show and you have it already recorded and you want to upload a show, but you want to send it via email, via the postal service, or you want to send it via URL, or you want to send it via in person, then you need to make sure that there's enough time between you reserving the slot and allowing it to get physically to me so that I can upload it and that I have time to do it. Now, we do have a HPR feed. So what can happen is a show gets posted and the actual content of the show needs to be edited or modified for one reason or another. For example, it might be breaking, something needs to be updated. So it is possible up until the moment of release, which is UTC, midnight UTC of the day that you're releasing, it is possible for me to go in and change that. certain people who have subscribed to the Give Me Everything as soon as it's posted to the website feed will end up missing out the changes. But that was part and parcel of subscribing to that feed. So if you don't want that to happen, then yeah, subscribe to the regular feed. That was the deal when we put that one up. If we submit a show, once it's been submitted, then it's submitted and it is going down to lots and lots of people. And I can force another update on the RSS feed by changing the file name and changing the publication date in the XML. That will force another copy of that episode down, but we don't do that because for a start, people are paying for bandwidth, and for a second, it is not my place to send down another show. The only time we've done it, I think we've done it about 5 times in as far as I can remember, in TWAT and HPR time frame, and all of those times were because the audio files were corrupt, so we had to send down a new file. So once it's released, I'm afraid it's released, and what we can do is the next available slot, we can, as we did with this one, I downloaded the show from the next day, added a text-to-speech spiel at the beginning correcting the information, and hopefully people will get it the day after. That's the best we can do. So that's an explanation of basically what happens there. And but you also need to be aware that I need to be aware of it. It's not enough to just upload it to the FTP server or send an email. You need to actively make sure that I respond before you can presume that something will happen, or you contact Dave or you contact Josh or somebody. Yep. So hopefully that's explained that. Okay, back to the comments. We had a lot of comments about success with students, and Kevi should know I listen to every HPR episode, even the ones from Scotland. And we had Dave Morris saying that it was an excellent show as well. We had comments on BIM Hints Part 2. Great series, wants to really get his fingers itching.
Looks to me like the Emacs needs to do a counterplay here.
Yeah, yeah. Oddly enough.
That sounds like a direct challenge to Claw 2.
Emacs was the first Unix editor I've ever used, even though at the time I didn't know I was using it. Of course, it could have been Nano either, because they share quite a lot of commands. Johan V started looking more into VI, and the amount of information is vast, he's saying. So he's looking to find out more information. Some comments on 15 excuses not to record a show for HPR. Johan V laughing at the reminder. Anonymous going, good points, maybe I'll do one, maybe. On Basic Mutt, there were quite a lot of comments. Great show. From Archer72, the RC file can be reloaded without restarting Mutt. Jonas didn't realize that you could use Vim as a text editor and using a text browser URL view, text mail client. So good stuff. Or Stackhouse commented automating alias file creation and uses Vim auto commands to do some of his automation, and also points out a link and says that there's a points a link to some Mutt tips and tricks. Next episode was favorite browser extensions by Finn, and the comment from Zolster was other useful browser extensions, congratulating on the good episode. And then there was Privacy Badger, which I had not heard about, and SSL Sleuth, two of which I was not aware of, and both of which I installed. So thank you very much for those.
Yeah, Privacy Badger is relatively new, but I think it's better than AdBlock.
A good list, actually, is becoming clear. Shields Up, comment on David's show about the heat shield, saying John Culp was saying it was beautiful, and how could his wife possibly think it was ugly? I personally think it's very, very nice. I like the wood stove as well.
Thank you.
Also very jealous of your shop. I mentioned that earlier on in the show.
The bad thing is my wife took over half of the building, so I only really have half of what I should have.
Oh, you poor thing.
She uses it for dog training and exercising.
You can tell her both topics of interest to hackers, so you can have her just play some HBR shows in the background, and then she'll be required to send in the show.
I am not sure that she's into HPR at all. She kind of wonders what I'm doing.
Good stuff from the... Keep them coming. Keep them coming.
I would like to interview her, though, sometime about dog training, because lots of people have dogs. You can see that. You just go down to the supermarket and look and see how much dog food is.
Yeah. Mike Ray commenting on the episode about Arch Linux and the Pi. Good episode about beer. And he has a script to put Arch images on the Pi. Oh, by the way, 50, why are you doing two episodes in one?
Well, sometimes I don't have very much to say on a topic, just something brief, so I kind of fold it in. But it, yeah, I've some of the stuff from KLF, stuff that I was going to fold in, I actually made into a separate podcast, so we're going to try to stretch some stuff out.
Yeah, just so you know, everybody, the episodes don't need to be long essays. If you've got a tip and it's like two sentences of a tip, send it in as a episode. Thank you very much. So he also, Mike Ray, includes a link to the Dropbox to get Arch onto the Raspberry Pi. That might be a useful link for lots of people.
Yeah, thanks very much for that, Mike. Because I'm going to probably, you know, I'm going to set up my old Pi as a server and reconnect the two external drives to it. And if I decide Arch is going to be my server OS, I'm definitely going to use your script to put it on the bare metal rather than going through noobs.
Excellent. On John Cope's Renovating Another Public Domain Countertext book, we had Robert Stackhouse saying slashes, an easy mnemonic, at least for me, is to remember a slash direction. In a way, top corner of the slash is pointing. So forward slash, backslash. So look at the top corner. Yeah, that makes sense. Almost there, folks, almost there. Running a small business using Linux, Jonathan Culp says, excellent episode. Wanted to try Ranger 2 years ago and totally forgot about it. I have no idea what Ranger is, and I look forward to either his or Beezy's episode on it. Then on the Five Steps to Vim episode, we had a comment by Zolster. Two links for broken href, and Dave had them fixed. And Dave, of course, saying that Frank, very enjoyable show, and it was a great way to get people who are nervous about Vim past their first hurdles. In fact, I think this episode is going to be, I'll be giving it out myself as a just go listen to this first. And last but not least, What's in My Pickup Toolbox by, oh, we've already done this. Oh, here it came to the end of the list for some reason, 50. We already covered it. Mike Ray, great podcast.
Yeah, I'm seeing it in the normal place from the late.
No, I opened them up in my tabs. It was on the, I had opened up all my tabs, and I think I clicked it as first, and then it went to the end, and all the other ones came in between. So, apologies.
Well, I'm flattered then that that must have been your favorite episode for the month.
This, it was actually one of those I mentioned it during the show that I really enjoyed, and a lot of the I just don't. You need to clean your stuff, get all your tools, put them all in one place. Being a farmer is not an excuse. So, I think, folks, that's pretty much it. Does anyone else have anything else to comment? Oh, yeah, there was a, in the last few days, there was some server moves. Josh from anhonesthost.com, where we have a 15% discount on shared hosting, has moved our server over, and there's been a few little hiccups on the back end, which you probably won't have noticed. Mike has said that there are some issues with the menu and the CSS, so there's several people working on that. I hope to get updates soon that I can put into the CSS for the website. If you have anything that you notice on the website that isn't working, fire us off email, or better yet, come in with add this line to this file type stuff. And so long as it obviously doesn't break anything, that will get added to the website. We're all about accessibility, and we're all about improving the experience for everyone. Anyone know of any events coming up that we should tell people about?
Well, there is PenguinCon coming up in 3 weeks.
Tell us more about that.
Why, I thought you'd never ask. PenguinCon is a convention in the suburbs of Detroit, Michigan, in the United States, that is a combination of a very extensive technology track combined with a science fiction convention. And I have about 100 hours of programming, and in fact, I'm probably going to record a program this afternoon and upload it that will go in great detail on all of this stuff. But we've got people like Bruce Schneier coming and talking, and folks from Canonical, from Red Hat, from MariaDB, from Zenos, from Docker. So be a lot of good stuff happening.
Is there going to be a HPR table, or at least roving reporters?
Probably not, because I'm way too busy to do that.
Okay, anyone going to PenguinCon, get in touch, and we will send you the stuff that you need to be our roving reporter there.
And Ken, Linux Fest Northwest is the 25th and 26th of April. It should be the same weekend as PenguinCon, so I won't expect to see... Won't expect to see a hookah there, but I just got the word here this morning that 11 geeks are landing in Portland and getting a van, or they're going to 11 geeks are leaving from Portland. I don't know how many of them are landing at the airport. They're driving the 5.5 hours to Bellingham, Washington, where the Linux Fest Northwest is held. They were wondering if I was on the way, and I'm actually driving myself, so I'll be seeing those guys up there, and I'm taking my Zoom with me to get some interviews. No, I tried to get a table there, and I waited a little too long and missed out on getting a table. So I've got a handful of stickers in my Zoom, so we'll be getting some information and some shows there.
And I'm pretty sure Door-to-Door Geek is the instigator of that van.
Yeah, drinking while driving is not allowed, of course, in Washington. I'm sure they're not going to do that, but I don't know who the driver is, actually. Maybe try to get some more info about that.
Yeah, he likes to do that. Last year, he drove from Baltimore out to Ohio Linux Fest and loaded up the car with a bunch of people, including our friend Jonathan Nato.
I hope he wasn't driving.
Well, I wouldn't put it past him.
No, that is true. That is true. Guys, if there's anyone listening as well who have shows coming up, feel free to send us in notifications so that we can put it into put little promo shows in into the feed, and that we can mention those on community news and stuff.
Now, hey, Ken, I also, you know, this isn't about a show, but there's a certain person in Dallas, Texas, who has something interesting to share that he should be sharing with HPR about a bigger space down there, and so he knows who he is, I'm sure. So he needs to get on the stick.
Absolutely.
I don't want to do too much of a housekeeping task here, but Hookah, I still have HPR's H1 recorder. If Dave is going to Northwest Linux Fest, which I was considering, and you're going to be at PenguinCon, do you want me to send you the recorder? Because Dave's going to have his with him.
No, because I don't think I'm going to have any time. I'm responsible for the whole tech track for this convention, and I will probably be running around like a crazy person.
Yeah, we need somebody to volunteer to go who's going to that show to see if they can get a group of people together to organize interviews and stuff. Yeah, volunteers, step forward. Okay, well, if there isn't anything else, Then I will bid you all adieu and tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public
Radio.
Join us now and,
share the software. You'll be free hackers. You'll be free.
I think you just curdled the milk.
Good night, all. Thank you.
Good night.
Good day.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.